You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with Rick Franzi and Doug Geveller.
Good afternoon and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show. This is your host today, Rick Franzi. It is a pleasure to be your host. As you know, my business partner, Doug Geveller, and I co-host this business talk show, which airs generally on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, heard live exclusively around the world on octalkradio.net. We air at 4 p.m. here in the West Coast for an hour, and I'm excited to be here today. Our goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, to make better, more informed decisions, and we do that by interviewing thought leaders and executives who have transferable knowledge and ideas. Your peer group, ladies and gentlemen, in the listening audience. This radio show is an extension of our 16-year business practice where we do a variety of things. We're actually a boutique consulting firm here in Orange County doing a variety of things, really all around helping executives make better, more informed decisions. One of those things are CEO peer groups. Doug and I, those here. Been doing it for 16 years. We do that in partnership with Renaissance Executive Forums. Renaissance is an international organization with over 1,200 CEO members, and their goal is to help their members take their businesses to the next level. We also do executive coaching. My business partner, Doug Geveller, is a master certified coach, one of only 900, well, frankly, there's not even 900, around the world who have gone through this certification process, have achieved this level of distinction, and have the capabilities to train at such a high level. Also, we do management development. We do in-house training and peer groups, as well as offer customer focus groups and a variety of other tools to assist business leaders here in Orange County to make better, more informed decisions. If you would like to learn more about all the various things we do, check out our website, www.criticalmassforbusiness.com, Critical Mass for Business. You know, our experience is that fully 80% of the challenges and opportunities, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, even in this economy, there are opportunities, are really common between businesses of different industries and different sizes. But what the key is that you have the opportunity as a business leader to learn from your peer group. This radio show is an extension of what we see happen every month in the peer group process. And the peer group process was written about in a stellar book called Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, which coincidentally I authored and is the first book ever written on this phenomenon of CEO peer groups. Check it out. Go to Amazon.com. and type in Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I, and you will find the book. Technically, this weekend is the end of summer, especially for those of you in the cold climates. Too bad for you, not for us. The pools stay open year-round here in California, but that's neither here nor there. Hey, who am I to throw stones or snowballs, as the case may be? Buy a couple extra copies and give them to your peers who happen to be business leaders and entrepreneurs. All right, enough about Critical Mass for Business and octalkradio.net. Let's turn our attention to our guest today, and it's my pleasure to have, and let me tell you, before I bring Mark Dingus of California Creations on the line, let me warn you, ladies and gentlemen, buckle your seatbelts. If you're driving in the car, make sure it's tight. If you're listening to this in an MP3 download off of iTunes or something else, if you happen to be listening live today in your office, then grab a hold of the desk, because we're going to be covering a lot of ground in a rapid-fire manner with Mark. And so I'm really excited to have Mark on our show. And so, Mark, let me say welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Why don't we get right into it? And I'm going to ask you, Mark, to talk to our audience about your path and experience that predates running and owning California Creations.
Sure. I go way back in this business. My business is basically a toy company, but I go back all the way into the 60s. My parents had a manufacturer's rep or sales rep's firm, and they sold things like the smile button to the 19 Western states. And while I was growing up, I was involved in a lot of that stuff with them. I was in my first trade show selling in 1972 when I was 13 years old, so it's kind of in my blood. I've worked at retail, you know, large Hallmark chain. I was a manufacturer for quite a few years in the 80s in Massachusetts. I moved back here and started a consulting company. And then in 1991, I actually bought this company and was a distributor for about 14 years with marketing pretty much about 1,000 products or more over those years. Many, many different things from companies around the world. So that's kind of how I got here.
You know, this is interesting, Mark, because one of our guests yesterday, his first professional experience was being a salesperson in a rep firm that was owned by his father. And interesting sales experience, ladies and gentlemen, is a great experience to have for an entrepreneur because, as entrepreneurs know, that really very little happens until you get that first client and then all the following clients. So great, great background and experience. Okay, you said California Creations, Mark, is a toy company. I think you're being somewhat modest, but give the listeners an idea for what your company's all about.
Okay, well, as I said, we've been in business quite a while, but in 2007 or so, I made a major change in the company from being a distributor in a model that was not working as well, and a couple of things fell into place to where we started marketing wind-up toys. And it's real difficult in this venue to explain fully what our wind-up toys are and what they do. I'm normally in front of people winding them up right now and showing them, so it gets across real quickly. But what we've done is taken what most people would consider a dollar wind-up toy at retail and turned it into a $5 wind-up toy, where a small 2-inch toy might have 42 different parts and does things that nobody's ever seen before. And we have an entire line of over 120 of them. We sell them all over the world. We've got about 250 sales reps in the United States, plus a number of distributors. We've got distribution all throughout Europe, Australia, Canada, pretty much all over the world. Business is going extremely well for us right now with this line that we've created over the last few years.
Why don't we, because I think you're right, and I know that your website has a lot of good information on it, and if people are listening, they're probably listening to this near a computer or, have the opportunity to log on to the World Wide Web. What's the URL for where you would like people to go to kind of see the toys that you're talking about?
Well, I want to give you a disclaimer before I send them there, and I don't mind sending them there, but we're in the process of remaking it. I literally have not had time to redo the website since we've had this explosion of business. It's not coming up on the priority list. I'm negotiating now, but it's at zwindups.com, just like it sounds.
The letter Z, windups.com.
Exactly. And all right. As I said, we're instituting a lot more video and things on there. If you also go onto YouTube, you can find all kinds of videos on our toys. Lots of people around the world are making videos of them.
Okay, which we're going to be talking about, kind of this phenomenon that you have unleashed on the world here with these really interesting and toys that do things that you don't expect. But let's get the back. We'll hold that and get back to that in a minute. Mark, of all the things that you've learned in your business career and now leading your current company since 1991, is there a particular experience or a key lesson that you've learned that helps you guide and lead your firm today? I guess what I'm asking, Mark, is there a guiding principle that you use to lead California Creations?
Well, I think it's a big question, and there's a lot of principles I use mainly from a long-term experience of going up and down with products over the years. I've had some really exciting products that have lasted a short while, and I've had others that I've sold for many, many years, including these wind-up toys, because I originally started with them in about 1986 as a distributor again for a company called Tomy. And each time I've kind of gone up and down the flagpole with these different ventures I've been involved with, the one element I would say that's probably my guiding principle is trying to get the right people in place with me to help me execute this thing. The people are the thing that make a company to me, and if you've got the right people who can do what's needed at the right time and know how to make decisions, you can be a success. I do a lot of business overseas, and one of the keys is I've got the right guy over there, within China and producing this stuff. I've got the right sales reps in the right places with the right customers. And it's finding those people who can do the job right and represent us the way we want them to, and you know, present us how we need to be to get the job done and execute what we need. That's, to me, is my the one key principle to make this thing work.
And, you know, your company is a global company. You alluded to that. And especially as the distance is greater and the time zones are different, I'm sure you're seeing as well the importance of the kind of people that you can count on that are, you know, that are there for you is even probably higher when we're not all under the same roof and, you know, you're not just a couple feet away or, you know, an intercom away from them.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, it's been trying to put this team together and trying to make this thing work on this global level has been difficult. I'm a big user of a thing called Skype, which probably a lot of people know, with the video conferencing. I probably do it 3 hours a day, which makes a huge difference to keep a team working properly and keep you in front of everybody. And I think, trying to manage the people and make the right decisions and allow them to have the freedom to make the decisions they need to make while you still coach them through what you need. You need to be on top of it at all times. And I think, as I said, on a global level, that's really important, is this being there every day with them to keep walking them through it.
You know, you're a toy manufacturer. Your business, and you said that earlier. You know, let's discuss, you know, how you've been able to avoid what I consider to be devastating kind of business cycles, sales cycles that are inherent in being in a business that many of the toys you said, you know, they run hot, but they may run hot for a short amount of time, which kind of sounds like, you know, many of them could be fads. So how have you been able to successfully avoid those devastating cycles inherent in being in a business based on fads?
Sure. Well, the first thing I need to say is I have not avoided them. I've been run over by several of those trucks as I've gone through this thing. And it's, you know, to me, the ability to get hit by it, stand back up, brush yourself off, and keep going, that's one of the most important elements of success in any business. But, keeping your enthusiasm up, don't quit, you know, quit when you fail and get back up and learn a lesson and don't do it again is the key. But I think the biggest part of what we've done or what I've been trying to do is trying to figure a way out to calculate risks in the business and to figure out ways to minimize them. Quite a few things that we do that seem to work for us is that I've done a lot of the jobs, pretty much everything out there that's involved with this business, from, as I said, on the direct sales side on the streets to manufacturing products. I've worked in retail stores, so I kind of know all the elements that are involved in this business. And when we release a product, my biggest thing is to think through the cycle of what's going to happen with that product as we release it and who's going to touch it when. So the first thing you have is you've got a sales rep who's going to try to sell it. So we've got to think through what it will take for them to sell it. We sell hundreds of little wind-up toys, but what we really sell as a sales rep is concerned is a display full of wind-up toys. They can run $700 for one counter display or $1,500 or $3,000, depending on the size you get to. So instead of the sales rep having to think, I've got to sell every single individual wind-up toy and get a yes or no on each, we ask them to take in five samples or so, sell the concept, and get one yes for the big display. And it, as a sales rep who are multi-line reps that don't work for me, who, you know, represent multiple companies, they're looking for fast income. And by thinking that through, it really helps them sell your line and put you towards the top of their book of things they're selling. Then you look at the retailer. If you can create a display that works for them and fits exactly where they need it to fit in their store, it puts you in a position where you've kind of thought through the problem for them, how they're going to display it in the store. So, you go down that chain, and you've already solved those problems for them. And as you do that, you create yourself a more fluid process of getting into the market, and it allows you, when you get a fad or one of these things, to move very, very quickly to put yourself at the front of it and not be, because a lot of people will follow you usually when you get something hot. And I've had a lot of printed materials and other things that are easy to make that people have chased in the past. And you can get into things where you literally have hundreds of manufacturers making the same thing. there's a little bracelet band that kids have been buying extremely hot right now. I don't sell it, but I know of it on the market. And it's one of those things that there are now just a rush of companies from overseas coming in with them. And that product, you know, is going to be dangerous unless you're on the very front of it and you are have the best, all the other elements in place. So on the front end of a fad, that's the first thing we try to do, is be real smart about our presentation, our packaging, our brochures, our sales tools, be very professional. And then as it gets going, I've always tend to try to plan out where I'm going to be in a month, 3 months, 6 months, and what I hear and what I see on from the people that are kind of, you know, where the rubber meets the road in the stores with the sales reps, how many companies are coming after us, you know, where are they and in the process, and how much competition is there. And that's been the key for me to keep away from trying to get hit by this stuff. And then if you do have one in the past where I have had one that's been chased, I try to get out long before it's over. Just take your winnings. It's like being in Vegas. I don't gamble over there as much, but my theory is if you were gambling and you were ahead, go away from the table. Don't sit there until you lose it all. So that would be my best way to do that. Fortunately, the product we've got today, I would not consider in the same light as a fad. I've been searching for a product like this for many, many years, because normally what happens is the product you have, you're selling the product. If you think back on some of the hottest products that have been around in the 80s, the Cabbage Patch Doll, the Tickle Me Elmo, any of those things, they were products that were selling, items or characters. My product, because it's a wind-up toy, is more of a vehicle to sell characters. And it can be anything to anybody. If you look at all the products I've got, we've got every kind of animal and robots, and you wouldn't believe the characters we're building, and they all do different things. So I like to tell people it's like a comedian who tells jokes. As long as he has new material, you're going to laugh at him. If he told the same joke every day, every time, you wouldn't continue laughing. So our job is just to create the next wind-up toy that you'll smile and laugh at. And we've been extremely successful at it, and I think we've released close to 40 of them this year. And these are really detailed, significant items. It takes us about 18 to 24 months to develop one. To build a toy like this from start to finish. And so it's no small feat to pull out that kind of number. And it's a hard trail to follow for people who want to come after what you're calling a fad here, you know, which I've been involved with many of them. Because most people are looking for a shorter path to success than that. And to have to develop something and sit here and basically finance a business and personnel while you're developing, it can be very difficult until you get there. So basically, I hope that answered your question about how I've been trying to avoid these fads and not get hit by them.
No, and we're going to talk a little bit later about kind of some experience that you had with a fad many years ago and kind of how that lesson has carried forward. And so I appreciate that. And I can see that what you have now is a line of product that you can evolve and continue to keep fresh, which sort of, if I was hearing you correctly, part of the challenge in your market space, as with many companies, is continuing to keep their product offering, whether it's a physical product and a toy or if it's a service, relevant to their customer base. And then there's the second challenge, which is this phenomena of rising expectations. I hear from service providers, Mark, that the first time I performed a service that was that the customer didn't expect, they were delighted by it, but they quickly became used to it and then became expecting it, and then almost becomes not good enough anymore, and I have to continue to find ways from a service perspective to continue to show them new services and to delight them. And it sounds
like from a product perspective,
you've got the same challenge.
We may have it almost in some ways exponentially from normal because of the children that are involved here and the attention span that you're dealing with of how fast they go through these fads. And often they can be months that these things happen and are gone, and you have no recourse. And if you haven't reinvented yourself, you're in trouble. And I agree with you completely that it's. I think other industries are catching us. I think if you look at the mobile phone market right now, if you don't have some new offerings every few months in there, you're just left behind. And it's something that my business has been dealing with, or this industry has been dealing with, since I got in, you know, 40 years ago or so, when I first became conscious of it when I was a kid. You know, when my parents were selling the smile button when I was a kid, that thing only lasted for a certain number of months and it was gone. And it's been the same. These fads just come and go. And like you just said, the ability to recreate yourself and make yourself, keep yourself relevant is really important. But the other thing that we're doing in our industry, which is a little different, we're actually naming our characters and telling little stories, having personalities to them. And we're creating a collector's club where people can buy look for all of them. We actually change the same item. We change the colors of it every year so that it looks different each year. So that's a possible collection method. You know, we're really trying to make, again, keep it relevant, but also within the framework of how expensive and how difficult it is to make these. And I think the long term of what we're building is going to be trying to keep people collecting, keep it moving forward. The other odd thing about our business is we actually sell more of these toys to adults than we do to children. We get the same reaction from a 4-year-old as we do from a 94-year-old. It's really unusual. We actually had a guy who we were contacting about a part of our website about the history of spring-driven or wind-up toys, and Leonardo da Vinci did a lot of work in this. And one of the most famous or knowledgeable people in the United States was one of the people we spoke to about the background of Leonardo da Vinci, and we talked to him, and this is a fully adult, grown man who's very highly educated, and he's naming two of our characters by name to us on the phone before we say a word about it. He said, "Oh, I know exactly who you are. I know Max and Molly. I give them as gifts all the time." And it was really unusual to hear a guy who's highly educated who likes it just as much as a 4-year-old. So it's kind of a funny product in the sense of how far it reaches. And, you know, what you're saying is exactly right. We still have that attention span issue that we've got to continually reinvent ourselves with. And that's what we're struggling with right now for both. We're building our 2011 line. I'm going overseas in about a month to build 2012 and 13, which we've already started.
There's some very interesting elements to these wind-up toys. One is the historical perspective, and you give a very nice sense for kind of how long they've been around, and then the fact that they are still in this highly technological age able to attract people in a way that you maybe wouldn't expect until you see them and you kind of talk to you and get a sense for their acceptance. And then that builds into this other element, which I find fascinating, which is the opportunity to create a collector mentality around the product such that it's desirable to have a lot of them because there's perceived either prestige or just personal satisfaction in the ability to acquire that. And so you've got many different kind of irons in the fire that it seems on the surface one maybe wouldn't think about the complexity of your business, but as you listen to you talk more, you know, I see a lot of transferable learning of what you're doing to other businesses, because we've had guys that run collector card companies on, and you know, different entrepreneurs who have this element in their business. It's just really fascinating to really get the level of complexity and then opportunity that you have inside your business.
Sure. I'll tell you, the it's interesting with the wind-up toys. The wind-up toys actually went into production factories in Europe in the 1880s, but they were made of tin, which was the gears were very inaccurate. So there's a lot of loss of power because you couldn't make gears that would drive what we can drive today. And it really came down to the ability. Tomy was the first to do it, who's this Japanese company that we've been involved with for many years. I've had a relationship with them since 1986. But they were the first ones to really take these intricate gears that they could injection mold and create little tiny gear boxes or motors that would drive them. And they made a little whale that swam and spout water in the bathtub, and they made a little kangaroo that did a backflip and some things that you just didn't expect. And that's what I sold for the first, like, 20 years I was with them. And it wasn't until we changed our relationship with them and they allowed us to make our own toys, and then we got the relationship to also sell around the world, because I only had North America before, that we were able to cut loose with our engineering. And now we're, as I said, we've got a little frog that's When you first look at it, you don't fully get it. But it hops, the motor's in the center of it, so it hops at the bottom. That function stops, and then it transfers up and hop, and the eyes blink. That stops and goes back. It takes 42 different parts to make that happen. And we make the toys clear or translucent so you can see in there and you can actually watch it working. So it's like watching a watch tick almost, if you understand what I mean, with all the little things spinning and moving. But you get to see how all this works. And we actually have some schools back in Massachusetts where a school teacher is teaching basic engineering using one of our toys, a little monkey with cymbals that walks and clanks, and he actually dissects the monkey with cymbals and has the children draw up the pieces, tell them how they interact with the toy, and they have to put the toy back together and have it work to pass the class. And he says it's one of his favorite times every year. I give him a new set every year to do it with. So it's really a far-reaching toy in that sense, but it's also, you know, as I was kind of saying earlier, it depends on who you are, what it is, because if we go to a specific company, let's say that's a real estate agent, we wanted to make a little house that said sold on it and came in and out, we could make a little walking house. We could make, you know, name a company, name an industry, a soft drink company, we can make a little a can that moves and walks and becomes them. As I said, it's the concept is a vehicle. It's not actually the toy. So as long as we understand and we know how hard it is to make these and you have the time, the lead time to do it, you can basically virtually make anything within reason.
So you're an engineering, you're a manufacturing, you're a marketing company, you're a sales engine, a distribution, and you have a global footprint on top of that. And you've alluded to your global presence. You have a heavy reliance on Asia for design and manufacturing. Can you explain to our audience why you kind of needed to have this structure and how you're making it work and plan to make it work over the longer term?
Sure. First, I think the best way to start this is the decision we had to make is, did we want a business or not? Our choice was produce where the production is or we have no business. So it wasn't a difficult decision of where we're producing. When I first got in this industry back in the 60s and 70s, product was produced in Japan. I don't know if you remember that, the little transistor radios and all the little stuff that came from Japan. They kind of evolved as an industrial society out of that. It went to Taiwan, it went to Korea, it went to Hong Kong. They evolved, and now it's moved into Malaysia and Indonesia and places like that. But China was the big, the 500-pound gorilla over there that always, if you could get in there and start producing, you had a longer lifespan because of the huge population. But I'm actually finding right now that they're even starting to evolve in certain regions of the country where they're not going to be producing anymore. And it's just a matter of time before, during my lifetime here, without question, our production's moving out of China. So this isn't, to me, really about China. It's about infrastructure and where the product could be produced. We have a certain price range that we need to hit to make this viable. We produce this thing and make the whole thing for about a $5 retail. It's $4.95 retail. If I made them in any other country, Europe, United States, any industrialized country, this would be a $25 item. I don't have a business. So the decision I had, that we had to come up with was, do we want a business and what good could we make of the business from where it had to be produced? And it's allowed us, there are thousands of people in the United States that make some or a large part or all of their income from this product. And we felt by doing a lot of the designing here, although there is a lot of designing done over in China, but a lot of it's done here. All the artwork is mainly done here. All the selling, all the distribution, all the real thought process of it is from here as far as how this is done. But there is an element that's over there where they have to buy machines in China to get this to produce these injection machines. They come from Germany and Japan. They're not made in China. There's testing labs, and we have 7 factories that produce for us. If you had to duplicate those factories here and actually recreate them, and it would be unbelievably expensive. You couldn't make this product. There's not enough volume in this product. We have to outsource and buy a lot of off-the-shelf gears where we can, where we design the product to utilize subcontractors out there to buy them. There's a giant company that makes little gearboxes, that's over there, the little motors. We buy it. We have them make them special for us, but they buy them, and they produce them for us. The infrastructure is the key. And the thing is that if you're over there, I have a remarkable team in China that works with us. They are on the assembly line in every factory. They manage them daily. They live there. In fact, most of them live in the factories above them, and it's allowed us to keep incredible quality. We have far less than 1%. I think it's less than 0.5% of defective goods. Our little gearboxes that we buy, you can never overwind them. You can't break them. So we've really gone to to a lot of expense and effort to try to make sure that we have a good quality product. And to do that, you have to go where it can be produced, and then you have to control what you're producing. And that's where we have really shined here over the last few years, is that we've created an incredible team in China. The leader of it is one of my personal best friends and favorite people in the world. He's not Chinese, which actually, funny, it's a huge advantage for him. About 15, 20 years ago, you'd go to trade shows in our industry, and if you could go to a booth and see a person from China who had broken English, your eyes would spark up and say, wow, I'm at the source. I've cut all the middlemen and I've got the factory. So the opposite way, our guy Chris over there is not Chinese, so when they talk to him, it's like, wow, I've cut out all the middlemen. I'm talking to the guy selling this. And he gets things done that a lot of people could never get done over there for us, and is able to manage these factories and keep pressure on them. And he also has a Western viewpoint that is really helpful to us. He's a British citizen and a long-term friend of mine, and it just worked out at the timing that both of us were available when this opportunity came up with the wind-up toys that allowed us to put this together. So I just feel that it's China gets kind of an unfair press, unfair treatment at times, not from everybody, but at times, of kind of being this big, bad entity out there that's producing and taking jobs in the U.S., These jobs were taken from the U.S. by Japan and Taiwan and Hong Kong long, long ago. There are very few people in the United States who want to sit at one table and screw a screw into one toy for, 8 hours a day, every day of the week, and that's the job they've got. And you can't get that done now in Taiwan. You can't get it done. You have to go to one of these countries that has the people that will do that. And probably the greatest resource in the world is a productive person. It's more. I would, if you gave me a choice and said I'll have oil or people, I'll take the people. You give me any resource and I'll take the people, because the people, you can turn that into whatever you want to turn it into. And a resource like the Middle East has is exhaustible or can be replaced. The people can transform them into anything. So that's why I think here in the United States we've been so successful, because the people are so versatile and willing to change as they go along. And I think as long as the people who are successful in this economic environment are the ones who are keeping a positive viewpoint and are willing to stand there and take the punches that are delivered and just keep going forward and figuring out how to make a success of what they've got.
Well, one of the observations that I heard you make about your business model is there are many firms here in the U.S. Who are employing people and making money off the selling of your products through the retail channel, whether they're the middlemen, the reps, etc., or the retail shop itself. But I also seem to remember that you said Europe was a large market for your products as well. So to look at your whole business from manufacturing, design, manufacturing through sales, distribution, etc., this is really touches a lot of individuals in many continents and countries around the world.
Absolutely. And it's as I said, we've got about 250 sales reps, but then if you put that onto stores, we've probably got in excess of 10,000 stores selling our product that all are making money from us if you looking at it that way. In fact, I have a good friend who has a store here locally in the South Coast Plaza, and he's told me that we're his number one dollars per square foot seller in the store. Well, there are, he's supporting some of his overhead doing that. There are people throughout the whole economic chain that reap benefits from any product, any commerce that's being done. And what's interesting is if you look at the margins of what we're doing, most of our costs go into other things. It's not especially into the cost of the goods. You know, we have marketing firms and printers, and we shipped in the last 2 days, we shipped more orders than we did in an entire month last year because we're growing so fast. You know, we have trucks coming in here all day moving stuff, and, you know, there's a lot of people. If you look at the, you know, we pay a lot of insurance. We've got, you know, every service you can think of that you run that a business needs to survive, and all of it is making money from us. Because we're successful with this, so I feel like it's a good thing for any commerce to be done. And in this market, you've got to find a way to be a success and employ people with what tools you've got. And you know, if this industry moves away from China, as I said, someday, and we're in the Philippines or in India or someplace else, you know, there'll be somebody else saying, you know, what are you doing over there without the jobs here? But the jobs are here. The jobs are in Europe. In fact, our European distributor just bought a 15,000-square-foot building. And when you think about 2-inch wind-up toys, it's room for a lot of them. And there, we've got distributors, sub-distributors through them. There are what's called a master distributor, where to build our toys in China, you have to build a large quantity at one time, and there's a lot of them. And you need to inventory a big, big number of them. So a small country can't afford to buy directly from us. So what we've done is we've put one big, large distributor in Germany, who then hired all the sub-distributors throughout from Russia down to Spain, out to, you know, Greece and Turkey and, you know, out to England, every little country and every little distribution arm that's over there. And each one of them are then trickling down to the retailers who are being very, very successful with our product. And, you know, they have their own thing because of all the language issues over there. It's not the same to sell there as it is here, where we have one language and one hang tag. They've got to look at a French hang tag and a, you know, a Greek one and an Italian and Spanish and everything else. So it's a whole nother business we have to deal with over there to sell our exact same product. Fortunately, though, the products sell and the displays are still the same, and all the basic elements of the business work every place we put them.
Well, thanks for that thoughtful discussion, because I do agree with you that sometimes you need to stand back from an argument or a position that may have some amount of emotion, especially given the economic slowdown in the U.S. and the cry for more jobs. So thanks for helping to give a global perspective and a very personal perspective on that subject as it relates to your business, Mark. I appreciate
that. One more thing is also the people I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the staff I've got here also obviously is employed, and I've got some very, very key people, not only here locally, but I've got designers locally. You know, my office is actually in the building here, but we've got a lot of sub-people that work for us right in Orange County and in Southern California. That we've got a display manufacturer here that he's actually putting on double shifts right now to try to keep up with it. He's got more employees than I do in this building. We're subbing out a lot of the design work here because we've got so much demand on new product. And I've got people up in the West LA area and the Valley that are doing that. So I've got a website group that's quoting right now for it. There are a lot of other people, and you know, especially my staff here, that all contribute and make a living from this. So I just wanted to make sure I don't think I mentioned the local people here along with all the external people that are involved.
Yeah, plus you have that high-powered public relations and marketing firm that you work with. I mean, there's big
bucks,
too.
That's exactly right, who's extremely good at his job.
You know, I'd like to come back to something that we talked about earlier, and I'd like for you to share kind of your painful business lesson that you learned in business as it relates, kind of coming back to the idea of the fad. So would you share with our audience kind of that experience and exposure that you had?
Well, I was involved... many people have probably heard of it, called Pogs. They were a milk cap line back in the early 90s, 94 and 95, mid-90s, I guess. We had the distribution rights to all the independent stores in the United States at the very beginning of that product line, and we saw it working well over in Hawaii. They had sold about 1 billion of them in Hawaii before it ever came to the mainland, and it hit Orange County first back then. Became extremely popular here in Orange County and then spread to Southern California. But there were a number of vendors here locally that were selling it. And so knowing what I knew at the time about distribution, and I kind of had established this business at that time, I gathered up about 15 of them and put them all into one warehouse in City of Commerce and then went out and marketed it nationwide. And basically, the only time my business has exploded in a very, very short period of time more than it is right now is at that time. We just basically blew the whole business apart of what was there at the time. Our computer system was instantly outdated. We had new people piling into the business. We were hiring constantly to try to fill all the gaps. And there was a tremendous inability to produce everything we were selling. Nobody could print them fast enough. They couldn't. There was all kinds of elements involved that stopped us. So as there was a huge demand and an inability to fill it, obviously the demand kept rising. The more scarcity you have in that, the better it gets. Well, what happened was that we kept growing and growing, and as we didn't deliver, we started delivering partial orders, which means we had huge back orders, which means we had to hire more people to manage the whole system. And it was a snowball effect, and it took my attention off of every other thing I was doing in my business. I had a number of other companies I was distributing, but they became real sidelines, and almost 100% of our business was put onto this, phenomenon that was going on during that period. We started in about September, and it lasted until April. On April 30th, or the end of April, a POG was worth about 25 cents, and on May 15th, it was worth about one-tenth of 1 cent, which is a really hard lesson to learn. Real quickly, I had been through some fads before, but I had never, ever seen anything get hit so hard. And what happened was it was a printed product. There was a scarcity of paper in China and all over the world at that time because everybody who had a printing press started printing POGs or milk caps at that time because there was only one POG. But there were stores coming out with literally bathtubs full of them. They were getting the old legged bathtubs and filling them with, I know one store in Texas that had 8 or 10 of these with 20,000 in each tub, and you'd get for a handful, you could buy as many as you wanted. And as supply and demand works, once you fill the supply, the demand starts to lessen, and that's exactly what happened here until it hit a critical mass point where it tipped in the wrong direction for us. And all of a sudden, we were virtually out of business. I had millions of dollars outstanding out in the marketplace that people owed us. Nobody could sell them. My business completely stopped. I had put pretty much 90-some percent of my attention on POGs and let everything else kind of go. And as a distributor, the way I worked at that time, because I needed these new toys coming in, I wasn't taking on any new products because I knew I couldn't handle them while I was doing this. So, I was just caught completely flat-footed when the thing ended. And I had to really scramble to survive. I think my controller at the time of my accountant in the month of July, I think I worked 80 hours, and they said I lost $500 for every hour I was working in the office that of write-downs, markdowns, losses, every single thing you could imagine that could go wrong was going wrong at that time. And fortunately, I had a lot of contacts in the marketplace. I found another product that we sold extremely well that Christmas because it ended. I really made my big turnaround in August to get back on my feet and pick the thing back up. And I had to let a lot of staff go. And I think the lessons there, and it's part of how this wind-up toy phenomenon works, I kind of have stayed away from those kind of fads since then. I've looked for a harder road, one that everybody can't follow so easily, because I think, I like to equate things kind of to mountain climbing in a sense of it's hard. It's really hard trekking up a hill with a pack on your back, but the ones who get to the top are the ones who will fight their way to it. And there's a lot of people who want to just go up, to the first lookout and stop and sit down and have lunch. And those are the guys who tend to get in late in the cycle. They try to just grab money out of it quickly, and then they try to burn it to get out. And I want to avoid things where they can be part of it. I want to go high enough up the mountain, if that's the right analogy here, that they can't follow or few can follow. Where you need an oxygen mask to stay with me. And we've kind of, I'm not saying no one's going to ever copy these wind-up toys, but it's going to be difficult. And I don't doubt there will be some dabbling in it, but it's going to cost a lot of money, a lot of time. Somebody's going to have to invest into a lot of engineering. And sooner or later, they're going to catch us, but I'm hoping we can be ahead of them when they do. That's why we're reinventing ourselves each year. So I don't know that it's possible to avoid a fad. I know that, the Wanted toys are going to be popular. They're going to go down again at some point. They will not always stay here. They'll never go away. They've never gone away. So I do know that amount, you know, of information. But my job is to read the risk, try to minimize my exposure of inventory. I've got a thing that I do with my receivables where when we give any credit to anyone of any consequence, we do a thing called receivable insurance where we actually pay money and we go out and get what you – it's not factoring. It's just insurance like you do on your house or your car. If they don't pay, I get 80% of my money back, plus I've got a big deductible, just like you would insurance. But it's kind of a backstop in case something big happens and stuff stops selling or something happens, you know, some catastrophe happens that people say I'm not paying. I've got a backstop. And as I said, you can't eliminate risk. All you can do is minimize it. If you don't want risk, you shouldn't be in this business, in any business. But what you can do is try to stack the deck in your favor. I mean, if you could go to Las Vegas and you knew half the cards that were being played before they were played, or three-quarters of them before they were played, you're going to be pretty successful over there when everybody else has to play with the whole deck. And to me, that's kind of the logic of what this risk is that if you can minimize that exposure in every way you can think of and keep your inventory down and turn it as quickly as possible, only dig in deep on the inventory when you know you've got outlets of ways to get rid of it, and then back down again as soon as you can, you've got a chance to survive these fads and be whole when it comes about. And the last thing I'd like to say on it is that the other thing is you've really got to be on top of your salespeople in the stores and watch for the key people, the key opinion leaders of that group who are on the front edge of this to say, wow, people are, you know, it's slowing down. The kids aren't collecting those anymore in the really hottest stores. If you know that, it's time you better make a change today because it's going to be gone in 3 to 6 months, you're over. So, you know, and hopefully you've planned and you've diversified enough, because that's the other thing we're doing. We're creating four other lines of product that are still associated with our business and still using engineering, and it's the same formula, but they're completely different displays and real estate in the stores that, again, will help us minimize being on one really successful category. So to kind of give you, that's how you know we've kind of done this, or how I kind of try to do it.
Yeah, your business today, California Creations, is a vertically integrated manufacturing company versus what it sounds like when you Pogs being a more pure distribution company. You have really changed the nature of the way you make money and grow your business. And it sounds like, from what you said too, the platform that you're on, the technology, the product, is certainly has demonstrated a long-term appeal. Now your job is to maximize and create, you know, other products. It sounds like you took a lot of good lessons away from that Pogs experience, Mark Dingus. And thanks for giving us that much background on it. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
If someone, you know, we gave the website early, but if someone came onto the show a little bit halfway in, maybe missed it, if they wanted to learn more about these fascinating toys and your company and you, where would you suggest they go, Mark?
ZWindups.com. And again, I want to say we're in the process of remaking that. I just haven't had time to do it yet. It's in the process right now. In the next 2 months, we'll have a much, much different site that shows all the movement of these toys, because that's the key of what sells, and that's what we've got to have on there. So right now you don't get to see the movement. I wish I could show everybody.
Well, it appears to this outsider who's had the pleasure of being at your corporate headquarters, your worldwide global headquarters for California Creations a couple times and working with you and getting ready for the show, that you've got a tiger by the tail with your wind-up toys, and I wish you and your company the greatest success in taking advantage of this opportunity. I want to thank you for making the time to be our guest today, taking the time to think about, you know, the questions and the answers and preparing to be interviewed. And thanks for being a friend of Critical Mass, the radio show. I appreciate it, Mark Dingus.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Mark Dingus, ladies and gentlemen, of California Creation, Z Windup Toys, and I hope you've enjoyed our show today. I hope the interview that I just conducted with Mark gives you some new ideas or information and help helps you in the future to make better and more informed decisions. If you would like to learn more about what Doug Gefeller, my business partner, and I do, I would ask you to visit our website, Critical Mass for Business. There's our contact information there, and sort of like Mark with his, Doug and I are on the precipice, big word, right, producer, precipice, about to launch a new dramatically improved website, so be watching for that. But I'll tell you what, the one that's up there today ain't half bad anyway, so feel free to check it out. You know, that's going to do it for us for this week. With the holiday coming up here in the U.S., we're going to go out and celebrate the end of summer. That's not so bad here. It's worse in Pittsburgh and Buffalo and other places. But anyway, I digress. Until the next time I have a chance to talk to you, this is Rick Franzi with Critical Mass, the radio show, heard exclusively on octalkradio.net, hoping that all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You're listening to OC Talk Radio and Critical Mass. Stay tuned for the Pilgrim on the 405 coming up next.